have Jesus in the house. It's nice to have you here, but it's so good to have Him here. Things happen when He's here. You're turning your Bibles back with me to the book of Mark. The 8th chapter, verse 22 through 26. A very short story, just a blip on the screen. But within this story is a lot, not just theologically, but how our mindset has to be to see change in our life. I guess probably the one aspect that separates us as a church and me as a pastor or what, vice versa, however you want to say that, from a lot of places, there are a lot of steeples in town and throughout the country. There are a lot of churches, and what separates churches that explode, grow, or see things happen on a regular basis, and it's simply because of this. The Bible never changes. That book never changes. That's just a given. That's what we all are connected by. But it is the change which God can do within us to help us to see where we're at, our society, working with people, whatever it is, as different. For 22 years, I have preached the gospel. And can I tell you, there has been a lot of change in those 22 years. Now, it doesn't mean that all that change is great. We've seen some fads and movements that came in and blew out, and we've seen some change that has been incredible. And so change, just within itself, is a powerful thing. It's very difficult. It's very powerful. To be able to move with God, to be able to flow and to see it as He sees it, and to be able to adjust, that is one of the most powerful tools you will ever have. Because one thing about God, He never stands in one place. God is always ahead. God is always moving. God is always. Now, last week, if I had to break this sermon down into two sermons, I would call the first one probably what everybody caught last week. And what I told them, I said, when we put it together as a two-part, I said, we'll do it kind of like this. We'll call it Nudged. Or When I Am Nudged, or Being Nudged by God. And so last week, I've had several people this week, and even after the sermon, you know, feel the nudge. And in Mark, the 8th chapter, verses 22 through 26, we hear the story of a blind man. And this blind man is brought by some others to Jesus so that Jesus might heal him. And so three things I wanted to reiterate, and just kind of before we jump into the second part. Understanding nudges. The blind man was first movable. We understand that Jesus took him by the hand. Jesus, when they brought him to Him, Jesus carried him. He was not only movable, but he was able to be led in unfamiliar places. Jesus took him outside the city where the noises were different, where everything was different. He was able to be nudged. He could not see Jesus. He did not know Jesus. In fact, we read that Jesus up until this point has not spoken a word to this man. He just grabs his hand and he says, very quietly, he starts pulling him, walking him outside the city. And then thirdly, we see that Jesus, before he does anything, before he says anything, before any great things, he does what? He spits in the guy's face. Now, the guy can't see, but he can hear real good. And we talked about just literally all the nudges that are taking place. Here's a blind man. If you just closed your eyes and imagine the nudges that he's going through. He feels somebody's hand grab him. He's never felt. He feels himself going outside the city where the noises are different. All of a sudden, he hears this noise. And then a spray on his face and on his eyes of spit. And then he feels a hand touch that. All nudges, all things that are happening before the touch of God comes in our life. And I'm going to tell you why most of us change. Most of us change because of this. Not because of the nudges, but because the pain of something gets so bad, we have to change. Most of us wouldn't have changed jobs, but we got fired from the last one. Or they let us go, and then we stick our lip out like, I lost my job. Well, you've been complaining about that job for 4 years. Yeah, but I ain't got one now. And so we stick out our lip, we get mad. But what it is, God is trying to nudge us all that time. There's a reason why our heart had left that place and was saying, look, you need to put some applications. I want to do something different. You don't need to be stuck here for 20 more years. I need to do something different in your life. Move forward. Well, God, I don't know if that's you. I don't know if that's me. Well, let me see if I can fix it for you. Let me go ahead and get you laid off. Now, do you think it's me? Well, that ain't God at all. God wouldn't have done that to me. Well, I had to. You wouldn't make a move. And so in our life, we have to become very, very sensitive to nudges in our life, to be able to see, even though we can't see, experience, even though we can't figure out exactly how it's going, to be led, to be directed, even take things in the face sometimes that seem like, that's not right, waiting for the touch that we really, really need. But what we like to start off with is the touch. And so we get caught up in the touch. And that's where change is real hard inside churches. Because here's the thing. If all we want is a touch, we get addicted to a touch, but not change. So what we do is we show up, we have great service, great music, great everything, great preaching, great altar services. People will say, in fact, if you do such a good job, you don't even get to preach. You just had the touch. Man, it was sweet. I'm telling you, we had church. Preacher didn't even get to preach. Well, tell me what changed about your church. I don't know, but Sister So-and-so, boy, I'm telling you, she got touched. Yeah, and Sister So-and-so, I bet she, was she still gossiping next week afterwards? I bet she got on that phone right after she got out of church. Because our thing is we get addicted to the touch. We like to skip all the spitting and we like to skip the moving and we get to skip all the hand leading and all that. We just want the touch. We just want to be touched by God. We want to get our blessing. We write songs about it. I don't care about you. I'm getting mine. We preach about it. We sing about it. We do everything. But the problem is nothing ever changes. Change is a totally different animal. It is a lot more painful animal. It is a lot more difficult animal. And so most of us just don't deal with it. This man doesn't have a choice. He's led by God, directed by God, moved by God, moved outside the city, spit on, and then finally he receives his touch. Now that was last week. This week I would call this beyond the nudge. Look at the person beside you and say, can you go beyond the nudge? Because this is the part we like, but if we have not experienced the nudges, then we can't really properly be touched correctly. It is the nudges that set us up. It is the relocation. It is the situating us where God wants us so that when He touches us, we can get the reaction that God wants from us at that moment. Let's say you get sick. You're praying the whole time, God, please heal me. God, just please heal me. If you just heal me, I'll do better. God, if you just heal me, I'll go back to church. If you just heal me, I'll do it. And God doesn't heal then. He nudges and He directs you and sets you up and he does all the things until He gets you into a place to where you get a mindset to where when it actually happens, God, I will do what You're asking me to do. Why is this so important, Brother Lott? I'll show you. Because this is the deepest part of this sermon. Now, go with me to verse 23. Mark, the 8th chapter, and verse 23. And he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the town. And when he had spit on his eyes, he put his hands upon him. Now, this is up to this point, it is not an odd subject, is it? This is what Jesus does all the time. He would shake hands with lepers. He would do all these normal things. He would say all these normal things. But understand this now. This guy has a theological problem. This guy has a relationship problem. This guy has a change problem. Because everything that he's learned about Jesus and everything he knows about Jesus and every level that he's made to in his knowledge of Jesus has got him to a certain point. And the point is this, is that Jesus can touch you. How many believe that Jesus can touch you? Sure. I mean, I believe Jesus can heal. I believe Jesus can raise the dead. I believe Jesus can save. I believe Jesus can touch you. I have no doubt in my mind that Jesus can touch you. In fact, when we read all the scriptures and we start to read the stories in the Bible, that's what we hear about Jesus touching people, laying hands on people. We hear about Jesus doing all these miracles. And so none of this is strange to this man. This man expects to be touched by Jesus. In fact, when we read verse 22, what does it say? It says that they brought him expecting Jesus to touch him. That's what they expected. That's what they were used to. That's what they wanted. That's what they came to church for, was to get a touch from God, to get a move from God, to have church. We want to have church. That's what we want, to have church. And we know if Jesus is in the house, we can have what? Church. It's a no-brainer. But Jesus does something here that he has not done any other time. Notice, when he had laid hands on him, he asked him if he saw aught, or did you, or do you see anything? Now that's a strange question to me. Because Jesus is the healer. Why would Jesus need to ask this man, can you see anything? I just spit on your face, I just laid my hands on your eyes, and I'm asking you now, can you see anything? He doesn't have to ask Lazarus, Lazarus, are you breathing? Or are you just twitching? He doesn't have to ask a leper, you think you got healed? I mean, do you think? Why don't you go to the priest and just see what they say about it? In all of his miracles, in all the time, he never has to look and he never has to ask and he never has to question, can you see anything? That's the oddest question, but it is a most powerful question. Because when you are after real change, you are going to have to come honestly and directly to God and be able to answer the questions and be able to answer the questions from what you have and what you know at the level that you are. Look, number one, three things I need to show you. Number one, what I see and what I have is better, but it's not complete. Can I tell you why most people don't like change? Because your life is better than it used to be. I mean, some of us, I grew up in a lime green trailer, and I grew up with just nothing hardly to ride in, and all of us sleeping, most of us, three or four of us in the same bed sometimes. And so just to have my own bed, just to have a car that's running, just to have what I have, I am doing better than I've ever done in my life. Anybody doing better than you used to? I mean, you're doing better. You know, you feel better. Your life's a little better. You're doing better. I mean, man, I'm nowhere where I used to be. I mean, I used to be a drug addict, but I'm doing better. I mean, I used to be just all messed up, but I'm doing better. I mean, I used to have a life. I mean, it just all kind of junk going on. But I can honestly say, Pastor, I'm doing better than I ever have. I'm doing better than I used to. I'm doing better in my life. Well, there's a problem with better. It doesn't mean that it's complete yet. It doesn't mean that it's finished yet. It just means that you're doing better than you used to. And this man, when Jesus lays hands on him, he has to ask him the question, because this man is wanting his sight back. This man is wanting to see again. Let me tell you something about this guy. This guy was not blind from birth. This guy had lost his sight somewhere along in life.
He had not lost his sight from the time he was born. He had lived at some point with some sight and some ability and some being able to. You say, "Oh, Pastor, it doesn't say that anywhere." Oh, yes, it does, because Jesus asked him, he said, "What do you see?" He says, "I see men as..." Had he ever seen a tree before? Yes, sir, he had seen a tree before. He knew what a tree looked like. So when he looks at Jesus, he says, "They look like, you know, like a trees in a forest. Just thick men, just trees. I can see men and they look like trees walking around. That's what I can see again. That's my ability." And he could have shaken Jesus' hand and said, "Man, I'm doing so much better. I mean, at least I won't bump into anything anymore. I mean, I can't see really, really good. I may have to go to the eye doctor tomorrow. But the problem is I can see somewhat. I can do better than I've ever done. Jesus, thank you so much. I am doing so much better than I was. Boy, I wouldn't have been able to walk out of here a while ago. But now I can see. I can see better than I ever have. My life is better, and better is always the killer of change in your life. Real change happens not because I'm doing better. It's because I've reached the place of where I want to be and where I've been called to be and where I've been designed to be." There's a lot of places I could have stopped along the way and said, "I'm doing so much better. I'm doing better than most churches. I'm doing better than most places. We're doing better than most. We're doing better. That's good enough, isn't it?" No, it's a calling that God has said, "I don't want better. I want you to reach the place that I've called you to." So in our lives, what we have to fight, number one, is the better mentality. "If I could just get out of jail, I'd be doing better." Yeah, you'd be doing better, but you wouldn't be where you could handle it. "If I could just get some things situated, if I could just find somebody to be my wife, my husband, if I could just get the stuff situated, I'd be doing better." Yes, you'd be doing better, but you still wouldn't be able to handle it. You'd still be half-sighted, bumping into stuff, and still be stumbling around. Still would not see stuff straight. What prevents us is the fact that because we can't see correctly, until you can see people correctly, until you can see your life correctly, until you can see where you're supposed to be correctly, then you'll always give the answers. You know the answers. Somebody asks you, "How you doing?" "I'm doing all right." "How's everything going?" "Oh, are we doing okay?" Because see, when you can't see good, you don't want to tell anybody you can't see halfway. You don't want to tell people where your life is. You just want to tell them you're doing better. "I'm doing better than I deserve. How's things going?" "They're going all right." "Well, is anything could change?" "Well, there's always a few things that could change. But if nothing changed, I could still be happy." This guy could have been happy. But notice what happens. Jesus then, verse 24 and verse 25, go with me. "And he looked up and said, 'I see men as trees walking.' After that, he put his hands" where? "Again upon his eyes. And made him look up. And he was restored and saw every man." Here's the key. Here's the key to your life. When there are things that are not clear in your life, that are not flowing, that are not good, do you understand? You need another touch from God. But that inquires, "I can't see right." You can't. You can see a little bit. You see better than you did 5 years ago, but you don't see good. And because you can't see good, you got to have another... Oh, Lord. I told you this second part will mess you up. Because, "But Brother Lott, I'm in church and I'm doing good. I teach or I preach or I do this, I do that." I don't care. You're still stumbling around because you can't see good. And it's the hardest thing in the world to have to go back to God and say, God, I need
touch.
Yeah. When I had to do that a few weeks ago when I go to my pastor and I go to him and I start complaining about all the stuff that, you know, I can't see this. I don't do it. I don't know what's going on. I don't know. And he sits down. He talks to me for a while. And basically what he does is, you just can't see good, Tim. You're just not seeing things right. You're not looking straight. And the state overseer of Alabama comes in, and you know, he's walking around. We're hanging out. And you know, here I'm sitting there the whole time thinking, I'm half blind. I'm half blind. I can't be half blind. I've got one of the largest churches around. I can't be half blind. I mean, I can see good. I've been preaching 22 years. If anybody can see, I can. Now, I can touch a lot of people. But me? But to go where I got to go next, and to deal with what I've got to deal with next, and to deal with the problems I have to deal with next, God says you're going to have to see better than you can see. See, Tim, you can see fine to do what you're doing, but you can't see fine to go further. You're going to need another touch so that you can see people clearly and see things clearly. Does this make any sense to y'all? Y'all going to have to get to... It is constantly, constantly in your life about one touch after another touch after another touch. You know what scared the disciples so badly? Was it Jesus was leaving? They'd spent 3 years with a guy. You think hanging out with somebody 3 years, you wouldn't need no more touches. I mean, walk on water like Peter, who needs a touch? I mean, these folks were casting out demons, raising dead people, healing leprosy, healing sick. Man, they were going into cities, preaching the gospel. I mean, they do not need a touch. But Jesus' main teaching was, when I leave, the Spirit will come and He will teach you. The hardest thing for Christian people is to realize we require touches. We require moments where we are touched. The enemy messes us up badly by getting us to a certain level and then embarrassing us if we act like we need something. If I go down there, people are going to think something's wrong with me. You're half blind. There is something wrong with you. You can't see straight. You do have a problem. Yeah, but it ain't as bad as I don't want people to think it's bad. It is bad. You can't see good. How bad do you want it to get? So that even that Sunday morning when I was with my pastor, I'm down at the altar, first one. I got deacons, I got people, I got him lined up around me, surrounding me, praying for me. And I'm thinking, in my mind, this is so embarrassing. You ever feel that way? This is so embarrassing. I ought to figure this out. I mean, I got a Bible, but I still require a touch. The moment you get to where you can't be touched, you're stuck. That guy could have went back into town. They wouldn't have called him blind anymore. They may have called him farsighted. They may have called him short-sighted. They may have said, well, our brother so-and-so, you know, he wears them big Coke bottles because he didn't quite. Maybe he'd been called four eyes. He'd have wore glasses. I don't know. All I know is this, is that he wouldn't have been complete. Now, I'm not talking about eyes now. We're talking about your spiritual. So y'all that wear glasses, I'm not picking on y'all. My wife wears glasses. She's fine. Looks good in glasses.
We're not talking about that. I'm talking about spiritually. Being able, how people describe you. Well, you know, Sister So-and-so, she's been going to church. She's doing so much better. Will she ever get that? Well, no, she's still struggling with some stuff. Oh. Still got a cataract. Still got some problems. Brother So-and-so, man, I heard he got saved, got injured. Well, now, he did, but now he's in and out. Sometimes he stumbles into church. Sometimes he stumbles out. Sometimes he can't see good enough to get there. Anybody know what I'm talking about? I can see, but I can't see clearly. I still, when I'm around people, they can find within me the problems and the situations and the things that are going on that's causing me. It doesn't take them very long. If you want to know what cataracts or what you got, all you got to do is just people you hang around on a regular basis, ask them what's wrong with you. It don't take but a second to ask people what's wrong with you. What's wrong with me? See? Now the problem is that if you don't want to deal with your vision problems, then you don't want to ask that. Because you don't think nobody really can notice that you're half blind or half this, half that. But when you ask people, you just say, what's wrong with me? You talk too much. Okay. What's wrong with me? You act like you know everything. Okay. What's wrong with you? You won't listen to nobody. It don't take 10 seconds. You hang around people that know you. You just ask them. Now, I ain't talking about the people that's programmed to say only good things about you. You know, everybody got those kind of people like your mama or somebody. You know, mama, they don't love me. You the sweetest thing in the world. So I don't know why they don't love you. It's all their fault. It's not you. You the sweetest thing. I ain't talking about that person. I'm talking about people that hang around you. What's wrong with me? Why I keep bumping into stuff? What's happening in my life? It's your attitude. It's the way you go about it. And a lot of them are just safeguards that we've put up in our lives because we've been hurt when we were young or we went through stuff. There are ladies in here, you're not going to marry a strong-willed man because you've been dealing with strong-willed people most of your life. So what you want is you want you a weakly little thing that'll just follow you around, carry your bags. And now, the problem with that is you complain because he won't step up and do stuff. I keep telling him to do something all the time, and he just sits there and won't do nothing. You married him because you like that. He didn't do stuff. So you put safeguards in your life to protect you, but the problem is that you got what you wanted. I got 3 hours worth of stuff there, and I'm leaving now. Does that make any sense to anybody? You got what you were after. You were after someone who overlooked or did not pick at your weaknesses. Touch me again. Can you imagine how many times in 22 years I've had to cry that, pray that, go to different pastors, go to different people. Touch me again, God. I can't go any further where I'm at. I can't see clear enough to make this next jump. I can't. And people think you just get there or you just arrive there. No. It's one touch after another. Let me put it the way Paul would say it. I move from glory to glory. It's revelation to revelation to revelation. And that revelation don't come because you hang around the same people who know the same things, who act the same way, and they've been your buddies for 22 years. That doesn't happen that way. It happens because I trade in my pastors. You know my dad used to be my pastor? My dad's biggest church, he had a few Easters where he had 200 plus people. My dad's churches were about 50 people. You think my dad can sit down with me and say, Tim, I need to tell you how to handle this board. I need to tell you how to handle committees. And I need to tell you, are you out of your mind? My dad is very relational. He understands relationships. So at that level, my dad is an awesome pastor. Then I moved to pastors inside the state. Wonderful pastors. Some of them run 100. Some of them run 150. Man, I hung out with them. We'd go eat dinner. We'd hang out together all the time.
And I say, how do you got it? Well, tell them, here's something you need to try. Here's something. And I say, boy, that, and we'd pray for each other. I could see it. I could see it. Now, I've traded. My pastor now runs 1,400. I don't have a Sunday school class his size. I walk in, I'm talking about my problems. He says, Tim, let me tell you about some problems. Let me tell you about how many full-time staff I have, and every one of them requires a check every week. Let me tell you about what has to come in each month, each year, to meet budget and to deal with it. Can I tell you about the fact that we're just trying to do some more dirt work over here, and it's going to run about $1.2 million? And I'm thinking, I just need about $900 to build my building. And he said, Tim, you want to talk about problems? But I'll tell you how to handle it at this. I'll tell you how you have to do things, and how you have to pray, and how you have to protect, and how you have to do, and the kind of people you have to surround yourself with. Tim, I'll teach you. Doesn't matter who you are in this room, you're going to either have to hang with people that know more than you all the time and learn what they learn, or we're going to do what we instinctively do, and that's hang with people that knows what we know. We all pat each other on the back, and we all laugh at each other's jokes, and we go nowhere. It's hard, isn't it? It's very hard. Here's a guy that looks at Jesus and says, I can see. And Jesus says, not good enough. And he puts his hand on that spitty face one more time, and he lays hands. And this time the guy can look at him and says, I can see clearly. Number three. Don't go there. But I can see clear now. Don't go there. One of the worst mistakes people make is that once they can see clear, they think they're going to go back to those same people, that same group, and they're going to convince them how to see like they see. No. Somebody's tried that. You ever try that? No. You can't do that, because when I hang out with pastors of 100 church and 50 church and whatever church, you think we talk about the same kind of stuff. And no, I hurt their feelings. It takes about that long. Because as soon as I say, you got to change that, you're not doing that right, and that won't work. Yeah, you need to get rid of that person. That person right there ain't going to help you go to the next. You got to fire them, move somebody else. Huh? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to do millions, but I do know where you're at, and I've been there. And I can tell you what has to change there to get to here. That's just like you working with your next door neighbor whose husband wife situation is a problem, and the kids are a mess, and you walk up in there and she's sitting there on a cup of coffee and she's saying, I just don't know what I need to do. And all of a sudden, because you've been there and you've went through all that, and you say, hun, I'm going to tell you what you got to do. Now, you're not going to like this, but I'm going to tell you what you got to do. First thing, you got to deal with that husband of yours, and you got to put a belt on them kids. You can't have them kids telling you what you're going to do and not do and doing all this kind of stuff. You're going to have to situate this thing. And you get that same look I get. I'll think about it. I just don't know if I can do that. What's some other phrases y'all might hear from somebody like that? Well, I'll try. Yeah. See, it happens at your level just like it happens at my level. It happens at everybody. It doesn't matter where you're at. We got a president right now. You know what? He surrounds himself with a cabinet. And he has to decide. I'm going to let them do the research. They're going to bring it in to me. I got to decide whether I do it or not do it. And that's difficult, because nobody likes to look like I don't have all the answers. It seems so much better when I just, yeah. It just seems better when I know everything. Life's so much better that way than when I need touches and I've got to see clearer and I've got to grow. And then Jesus throws this bombshell on me and says, don't go back there. Jesus looks at this man and says, go home. Go home. and do not go into the city nor tell anybody in the city what just happened. But Lord, there's people in there. There's other blind people. They're going to want to hear this. They're going to want to see this. But see, Jesus knows something, and if you'll take the time, you'll find it out too, that Jesus understood some things that He didn't understand. Let's go back and let's understand this story. Verse 22, go back with me. Can I show this to you real quick, and I'll be through. Say, thank the Lord. Verse 22. And He cometh to Bethsaida, and what? They. There's a word there. And they. Who's the they? Do they believe in Jesus? It's the they. Look at the person beside you and says, there's a they in your life. You got to understand this. You got to get this. There is a they in your life. Now, they will help you where they know to help you. They will be able to help you to the level. Remember I told you I've got pastors and my uncle was my pastor and all this. These guys, nothing wrong with any of them. But they know a certain thing. And they know it well. And they knew to take this man to Jesus because Jesus could do what? Could touch him and he would be... That's all they know. That's all they want to know. That they don't want to know anymore. They don't want to learn anymore. They don't want to grow anymore. That's all they know. That's all they need to know. Now, you think they've got problems and they've got situations and they... Sure they do. But they only know that Jesus can heal blind people. So they, which is Bethsaida, which is the town people, which is the people that say, we know how to help you. We're going to get you to Jesus and Jesus can heal you. They have already seen Jesus heal. They have already seen miracles. They have already seen all these things. They've already been around it. Some of you in this room have been around Jesus for 20 years. Some of you have been in church most of your life. Some of you can quote more Bible stories and Sunday school lessons. Some of you have had the church up to here. You are the they of society. You know it, but you can't act it out. You know it, but it hasn't changed you. They believed that Jesus could touch him, but they could not help him anymore from where he's at. And he sent him away, verse 26, and said, neither go into the town, neither tell it to any of them in the town. Go with me to Matthew, the 11th chapter, verse 20 through 22. And I'll show you what's happening. Then began he to upbraid the cities, wherein most of what? His mighty works were done. This is where miracles took place. This is where things happened. Because they, see, they got a touch. They got the sick healed. They got fed by 5,000 and fish and loaves. People always like, oh, I'd love to have been there when Jesus did this. I could care less. That's not where I want to live. That's not the level. I would have hoped I'd have enough sense to bring something to eat. That's not where I want to live. That's where they live. They live bringing nothing, requesting nothing, and then all of a sudden expecting Jesus to take care of their mess. Anybody got some days in their life? You done told them 1,000 times, look, you got to stop doing that. You need to change. You need to quit doing that. And they keep doing it, and all of a sudden they done gone back to the bingo, and they done gone back to the casino again, spent all their money, and they come back to you and say, can I borrow $20? Come on now. And you'll try to say, look, let's talk about this. Look, I don't want to talk about it. I know I did something wrong. I know I shouldn't have done it. I ain't going to do it no more. I just need $20. See, there's a bunch of theys in your life. They are theys. If you tell them, look, you don't come out of 8 bad relationships. This time, quit sleeping with those guys and just hold your morals up and wait till one puts a ring on your finger. And when one puts a ring on your finger, you marry that sucker. Okay. I'll try. 2 weeks later, riding around the car with old Joe. Y'all getting married? Well, we're talking about it. Okay. They. Jesus says, Bethsaida, woe unto you, Chorazin. Woe unto you, Bethsaida. Why? For if the mighty works which were done in you had been done in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes. See, the problem is they don't want the next touch. The next touch for that city, the next touch for the Bethsaida, the next touch was for Jesus to put His hands on their head and to say, listen to me, I'm not just a healer, I am Messiah. Well, I don't care about that. I just want some fish. We just want to have a good church service. I don't want to know all that. I just want to get my blessing. Then I go home and act my same old way and live my same old life. Then I come back next Sunday all depressed because it's been a hard week, and I get my blessing. And if that gets old, we'll have a week-long revival. I get a blessing 6 nights in a row. And then after you leave, you'll have to come back 6 months because I'll be dead again. Because all I want is what I always get. I want what I want, and that's all I want. And because there is no change in the person, because they will not change, there will nothing significant ever happen in their lives. I know this ain't fun. This is just the truth. It's reality 101. He says, but I say unto you, it'd be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon in the day of judgment than for you. I'll give you one characteristic of people like this. It's the only one you'll need if you ever hang around. They will spend an awful lot of time talking about what they have that others that they know don't have. They'll stay up wee hours in the morning talking about how blessed they are, how good it is. Woo! I felt that. But no change. People who are in a constant state of change don't have time to worry about whether I'm better, worse, higher, lower. I'm just busy. Does that make any sense? Because I'm in a constant trying to get the beam out of, I ain't got time to worry about that splinter that you bothered with. Now, if I get this beam out and I'm all cleared up and I can see clearly, and you say, Pastor, would you help me with this? Man, I'll be happy to. I think I can help there. That's a good thing. But I'm not running over to your house to help you with your stuff. Because I'm constantly working on me. I'm working on Taylor and Nathan and Caitlin and Elise. And I'm constantly trying to learn, keep living right and acting right and doing right and working and constantly going and being what I'm supposed to be. I got enough to keep me busy. Just working on. Paul would put it this way. He would say that we should have a life that is such that we can live peaceably with all men. You can't live peaceably if you're always pointing at people talking about how bad they are and how good you are. That ain't peaceable. Peaceable means I live a life where others look at me and they say, I want that. That's peaceable. I want that. I got 1 minute and 59 seconds. This is Palm Sunday. I'll show it to you on a larger scale. This is Palm Sunday. This was where we celebrate 7 days before Jesus died. Jesus comes into Jerusalem. Did they know who He was? Had no idea. They celebrated Him because He had raised dead people, He had healed sick, He had fed them, He had done all manners of miracles. And when He comes into the city, the Pharisees and them asked Him, who is this man? And they said, he is the prophet from Nazareth. Have you not heard of all of His exploits and all that He's done and all the things that He's done? They take off their coats, they take off their jackets, they lay palm leaves. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. It wasn't until 7 days later that they actually knew who He was. They didn't know who He was. Therefore, they didn't worship Him. Therefore, they didn't welcome him. Therefore, they didn't repent and allow him to change them. Therefore, they did not know what was to come. My mom used to say something, used to stick with me, but I can't use this phrase much anymore because it takes understanding. Talk about bars or doing something wrong or sneaking around the side of the shed and doing something. My mom would always say it just very plainly. She'd say, "Tim, if Jesus came back, while you was doing that, what would happen?" Now, I know I can't share that with many people these days because back in those days, we didn't really worry so much about what was going on right at the moment and worried so much about what was happening right at the second and exactly how broken my heart was or whatever. What we worried a lot about was what was to come because we knew who He was. We worshipped Him for who He was. We believed in who He was. We believed He was coming back. We believed Him as Savior. And because we knew all those things, it really mattered very little about all the other stuff that was going on. When somebody said, "Well, this happened. Hey, look, 100 years from now, it's not going to matter. Well, this happened. What is that? I mean, as long as we got God, as long as we got this, we're going to make it through." But you got to know who He is. And the world is full of people that fight, reject, don't like change. Some of you are going to go back and hang out with buddies that you know you don't need to be 10 miles from them. You're going to text people that you know you shouldn't even have conversation with. All because it's more comfortable here. Change is not an easy thing. But listen to me very carefully. If we will allow Jesus to really touch us and touch us again, where we can see life clearly, where we're supposed to go clearly, how we are to live clearly, it makes the journey easy. It makes the journey easy. But if I'm trying to fit Him into my friends, my life, my way, my direction, my goals, then it makes the journey hard. Pastor, what do I need to do? It's simple. When you leave this room today, you're going to get nudges. Maybe you're going to be in a phone conversation and God's going to say, "Don't say that." And you've got to decide whether you can keep your mouth closed about that thing that you're not supposed to share and just play dumb. Maybe you're going to be at the coffee stand with somebody and God's going to say, "I don't even like being around them." And you got to look at them and say, "I'll see you later." You're going to have to accept the nudges of change in your life. You're going to have to accept the nudges. Maybe you say something to your wife and it hurts your feelings and God catches you as you walk around the corner. You better go back and fix that. "I didn't do nothing wrong." You better go back and fix that. You had better accept the nudges in your life because the nudges set you up for the touch. The touch sets you up to see clearly. And seeing clearly sets you up for a life that's full of peace and joy. And a journey that you enjoy living. I may not jump as high as most people. Don't run very often. But I've learned to do one thing very well. By the nudges and the touches, I've learned how to live this life. I don't know if that impresses you or doesn't. I've learned how to live this life and to live it and enjoy it. If you don't enjoy the walk that you have, as we draw close to Easter, it don't just make yours, I mean, just excite you to the kilt to know I'm going to get to see Him one day face to face. Then you might need to be checking whether God is trying to nudge you
and move you where you can see and hear clearly. Will you stand? If you're here today, you're fixing to walk out this door,